There we go. All right, we are live.
Live and unedited.
Yes, unedited on a different channel. And Noise is wondering if we forgot to push the live button. Actually, I had a... So my cable was plugged into my computer and plugged into the modem, but not enough. It was still in the modem. You couldn't pull it out, but also wasn't touching enough to actually have internet. So I had to figure that out.
They always have that little like plastic click thing. Like you push it in and it clicks, but you got to like get the real click. You were getting a little bit of click.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the technical term is for that. Maybe Noise knows. And so what we're doing is Ivan had someone reach out to him and asked if we could put the podcasts as regular videos onto the channel because whatever app they were using couldn't, I guess, grab them.
Yeah, they were having a hard time like getting when it shows up. Because in like the actual browser interface, I know like live is like on a separate thing. So maybe that's why, I don't know.
Yeah, that could be for sure. So what I can do, and it's going to be a lot of work, and I'm starting it now, is I'm going to go through and I'll basically remove all the dead spots, clean up the audio. I got a few things I can tweak in there so it sounds a little better than the live stream anyway, and re-upload it. And then when I re-upload it, I have to figure out why I'm not allowed to sort the video playlist because my system language apparently is not the same as my video language. Therefore, you're not allowed to change the order of the videos, according to Google.
That is both the most YouTube thing I've ever heard and also incredibly stupid.
Yeah, that's Google for you, I think, right there. Yeah. So I have to decide if I'm going to keep trying to fight it. Sometimes you win when you fight it. And eventually I can figure out how to get all the languages aligned so I can move videos in order, or I'll just remove every single thing and recreate the playlist. I don't know. Playlist will still be there regardless. It's going to be the same playlist. It just depends on the...
Yeah.
I'm going to remove every single video and re-upload every single video.
I guess this is what happens when you set your computer to Greek on a whim.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Oh, God. that's where I'm at with things.
All right. Well, that's pretty awesome. Now, if it turns out this entire thing is like a massive waste of time because people don't end up watching it that way, maybe we just end up not doing it. We just say we experimented with it. And, it's a scientific process, right?
It semi-works in my workflow anyway, because I need to get the videos edited and passed over to Mark from Bedroom Battlefields to upload into the other podcast services. So it doesn't add too much work on that end. It's just the initial switchover is going to be the
work. So hopefully it all kind of works out.
Yeah. And when that's done, it doesn't really matter too much in the long run. So.
Yeah. And, you know, like we were saying on the Discord, this allows us to insert additional goblin erotica.
Yeah, exactly.
That we can't have live because, you know, goblins are kind of hard to pin down. So
yes,
this allows us to target more of our core demographics, which are nerds and perverts.
Yeah. And for anyone who has goblin erotica they want to have promoted, then I can definitely insert that into
edited videos. So I hear
for money, of course, you give us money. And
I hear that should pay well. So
I've
heard from all the like furry artists, those dudes pay. So I feel like goblin erotica enjoyers must have some money sitting around. They just aren't doing anything.
Yeah. Come on, guys. Just share the love.
Be the change that you want to give us. Mm-hmm.
Well, so far, being on this channel doesn't seem to affect anything because we have 9 viewers, which is higher than average, I would say, at this point in time.
Yeah. You can tell how early it is we are close to breaking the double digits.
And we know you're hiding out there, Ham, but you just come out, okay? We know you're there.
It feels like the double digits is like, because then once you get to there, like, you're in the double digits, whether you have 11 people listening or like 79. That's like a long haul. That's like, it's like when you start exercising or something and like you feel great when you run for 500 yards or something. And then from there, it's just fucking torment because you are now it's just like the plateau until you can go like 10 kilometers or whatever milestone. Like, nobody gives a shit if you can run like one.
Yeah, it's true. A couple blocks is my usual limit.
yeah. Like whether you can run 2 or 3 blocks, it makes no difference. Oh, somebody's saying his wife is in the same room, so we do technically have a 10th listener. Turn that shit up.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah. If you turn it loud enough, I think we can include your neighbors if you live in an apartment block.
Mm-hmm. And we'll say hello to Donald Levick, 4230, who I believe we've never encountered before, so thank you for coming.
I feel like if it's a first time listener, they should be counted double.
Yeah.
So I guess today is all like shilling shamelessly because we don't have any shame. But we're going to tell Planetfall, which I think we actually had an episode about like a long time ago. So you can sort of tell the progress of time. Like before your kids went off to college, we were talking about Planetfall. Now we're here. Your kids are on Christmas vacation at home.
It's a Christmas miracle.
Yeah, it is a miracle. I actually don't know, because I don't tend to keep good notes or track of things. I don't know how long. It was less time than Tactics took, because Tactics was, like, the Tactics, like, manuscript, or whatever you call it, the finished book that I sent over before it goes to editing all this stuff, that was, like, not very long after 5 Parsecs from Home got its glossy book. Mm-hmm. So, and that was, like, I don't know, like, a 2-year run before that made it through. So Planetfall was... It still took a long time. News has opined on that.
But, was that a pure Modiphius initiative? Like they said, we want this from you, or was that something you proposed to Modiphius?
So what happened was we were talking about possible next things, and they were like, I want to say there were 3 ideas, but I'm forgetting one of them now. Oh. One was to do a spaceship game. Everyone is going to be mad when I say this. Then this, which was one of those like just obvious things. I don't think that was like somebody's idea. It was just so obvious. Then I don't remember why. I might even just have been like replaying some Alpha Centauri, but I was like, you know what? We could do like a colony game because everyone likes that, but nobody ever does one because it's a pain in the ass to do. And then I don't remember what the 3rd idea was. But then it was like, okay, because I think they wanted to buy a spaceship line or something. Because they were like, if we're going to do spaceships, I think they had wanted to get a spaceship figure line just for to have. So that sort of like got pushed out a little bit of like, okay, we'll definitely do that, but not. So yeah, Planetfall was just kind of like the obvious idea at that point.
Okay.
And it kind of appealed because they're very, like, they really, really want that sort of like, I don't know. It's not really an expanded universe, but like this idea that like all of these games take place in the same universe, sort of vaguely. So it kind of just fit in that. So yeah, it was one of those, I think it was my idea originally, but it was, again, one of those that was just so obvious that like we just had to do it. Tactics was 100% my pushing for it. And I had to sell that a little bit. It kind of went from them like kind of being hesitant about doing it. And then at some point, something switched. They were like, okay, yeah, here's like the word count and go for it.
I think so. Maybe the popularity helped of 5 Parsecs.
Yeah, I think it's it's kind of like the stepchilds, where because you get people who are like, you can see like more and more posts start popping up about it, but it's kind of taken a while for it. Like I think people didn't really know what to do with it.
Yeah. And I definitely see more posts in the Facebook group now popping up whenever Facebook deems to show me posts from the group I run. I get to see that. Some people are talking about 5 Parsecs tactics, and that's great.
Yeah. I think it's more so that you just get a little bit more. I hope we didn't lose connection.
So too.
You are breaking up real bad.
Yeah, I can't see it on my end, of course.
Yeah, it's kind of like choppy, and like now you're like getting blurry. So I don't know if we have. I don't know if people can. If anyone is listening, if you can post in the chat, if you can, if everything's coming through. Well, now it looks okay.
Okay.
All right. We're just going to have to kind of.
Yeah. Maybe it wasn't just the plug cable need to be touched more. Maybe something is going wrong with the modem. Who knows?
Yeah. A friend of mine had massive modem issues, and it turned out it was literally just like the actual Ethernet cable had gone shit because it was like, I don't know. You know how you keep reusing the same cable in your house for like a fucking 2 decades.
Yeah.
He swapped it out, and like all, he was ready to like buy a new modem. He swapped it out and it was literally perfect. So if in doubt, try like spending $10 getting new cable.
yeah, that's right. So it was just me who was frozen, according to Donald.
Yeah.
And it is their first time here.
Yes. The audio is still a little shit, so we're just gonna have to be good with it.
Yeah. If you're there, that's all that really matters. So you just talk and if I garble things, then that's fine.
Yeah, if I like ignore a question you have, I'm not being a shit. It's just that things are. So I guess the first place to start is really like, what the fuck is Planetfall? And it's basically like a colony building like adventure campaign with tactical elements and blah blah blah. Like the whole setup is that your crew or your roster, I guess, I forget what I called it, your group, your characters are setting down with a bunch of colonists to build up, you know, it's an unexplored world, although there are definitely signs that someone has been here before because it's shit full of alien ruins. And from there, you build a base and you undertake missions and gather things around the world and research things and fight dudes. And yeah, the big changes are, I guess, compared to like, because there's like the Parsecs way of doing things and there's like the Five Leagues way of doing things. So this is the first time you get to do like a map in Five Parsecs. And the map is like an integral part of like how the campaign works. Like things exist in specific like squares on the map. Unlike the Leagues map, where it's very sort of open-ended and things get filled in, here it's very sort of like you have a grid, essentially, of things can happen in certain places, enemies pop up in particular spaces, certain different maps because have different amounts of resources and stuff. So there's a bit more of a sort of tangible element to that. Your base is in like a specific map space and where tactical enemies, like if an enemy touches down in a space that you were trying to, but there's like an alien site you want to explore, you're going to have to deal with the enemies first before you can kick them out of there, right? It's set up so you can both carry over some of your characters, and there's a little process for that. There's also like you can make brand new characters, and they have kind of the, I wanted a little bit of a different vibe this time. So you have actually have three character classes now. You have troopers, scouts, and scientists. The idea is that the scientists are there to do science things, the scouts are there to scout and figure stuff out, and then the troopers are there to kill things with big guns. So you kind of, you get a little flexibility in like what you want of each character type or how many of them you want. They progress slightly differently. They're not like skill tree, but they each have like some touches when they advance. Mainly they get some abilities up front, and there are special equipment that only certain classes can use. You can't load up your scientists with like machine guns and stuff, but there's other equipment and weapons you can research that are specific to like scientists or scouts or stuff. And you get some pretty cool stuff. But that's sort of the basic setup. So when you send out characters on a mission, each mission will state like how many characters you can bring. So you can sort of pick if you're going out. Some missions will reward you for having a scout or a scientist along. Sometimes you just want to send out like the troopers to go like tear shit up because that's what the mission is. You also have grunts, which is kind of like the faceless. They don't progress. They're just dudes with rifles, but you can always bring some of them. If you're going into a heavy combat mission, you can even bring like a proper like fire team. You can also just bring like a random civilian with a shotgun. if you're down on your luck, you can bring a dude. And that's kind of a desperation move, but you know, you get the option. I don't think we introduced any new aliens this time. It sort of relies on, because in the like setting, you're part of a Unity expedition. So it's humans, ferals, which are like the animal dog people, and a couple other sort of human subtypes. And you can also have a soulless like advisor type, which is like the robot peoples. So you have, there's some options. You don't have to be strictly human, you know, like we are. But so that's kind of like the character setup. It's a little more specific because it's a more specific type of campaign. I think actually the troopers work out to be slightly more powerful than like Black Hunt soldiers. So maybe you can read something into that if you want, but you know, the Black Hunt dudes are kind of cannon fodder. That's up to you.
Yeah.
So the core of the game is still, it's still sort of the two-part campaign where you have like the tactical aspect with the minis and you have the campaign aspect with pre and post game steps. So the tactical combat is mostly, I'm going to pull up my PDF here and look at it. We had hoped we could show some stuff on screen, but I have not gotten my like final PDF yet. The one I have has like art pieces that got replaced because they were kind of placeholders, and it still has like editing notes on it. So we can show that one just to avoid confusion there. But so the tactical combat, like I said, is mostly what you expect out of Parsecs. I know Parsecs combat has always fit in this role where it's very fast and very kind of simple. It's not meant to be like a really heavy, like tactical game. There's a little more flair at it this time. The same mechanic that showed up in Tactics, where if you're hiding behind a like piece of scatter terrain, that terrain can be blown apart, but save you from a hit. That exists here. I think it works. I think the mechanics work a little different than in Tactics, but it's the same sort of principle. There's also a status added. If a shot rolls equal to your toughness, you're knocked sprawling, so you can't move or fire at all on your next go.
Oh, nice.
So it's like a heavier stun. Getting stunned tones things. It has been toned down a little bit. If you have a saving throw from armor, and all troopers get a saving throw now, you don't get stunned, and you also don't get stunned out when you take three stuns. So you're a little tougher in that sense. The kill point mechanic from Tactics is here, mostly for like big monsters and stuff. So you can run into animals that take multiple hits. You can also take an action to give aid to somebody else. You can remove stun markers from them. You can give them a bonus to attacks and stuff like that. You can kind of help out. Otherwise, it's mostly the same. There is a section added now where there's a little variation for what actions the AI does. So sometimes the enemies will take slightly different or more random actions than they normally would. I know a lot of people are like really into that thing, but I've always held like very strongly that you should never be rolling dice every time a character activates or every time an enemy activates, because it just adds up real fast. So it's a little different. Do you want to read the question?
Yeah.
Just for
as long as I don't break up.
Audio only. Yeah.
So apart from Alpha Centauri, what other 4X games did you draw inspiration from? Asked Ched 80.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the answer is pretty bad because Alpha Centauri and was kind of the only one. Plus, there was that, I forget what it was called. It was based off Civilization V, but it was basically Alpha Centauri, like, again. I forget what it was called. Nobody liked it, but I thought it was pretty good. But it was kind of like that vibe and just, like, adapting it into, like, what would that look like in the Parsecs universe? So that's kind of the main thing. A couple of people have suggested, like, oh, is this based on XXX, like, anime or TV show? And the answer is no, unfortunately not. Otherwise, the main inspirations are sort of the core, like, Parsecs inspirations, which is stuff like, especially Mass Effect here is probably, like, a big factor. I always like the feeling in the Mass Effect games of, like, how when you land on the world, it's like a frontier colony. It has, like, its own vibe and stuff.
Yeah.
Obviously, Mass Effect Andromeda was, like, a huge factor for that, which I still maintain was a great game. People can be mad about that, but I liked it. So that's kind of the main thing. As is often the case, a lot of these influences really are, like, coming off video games and stuff like that. There's a lot of, like, classic science fiction that are about, like, colonies and stuff in space, but a lot of that stuff is, like, obviously in the background inspirational, but it's not, like, direct, like, influence. So for, that's mostly it for, like, tactical elements. Like, it was one of those things, especially if you have to be able to carry characters over, there's, like, you can't change it up too much, and also people wouldn't want it to be, like, super different. It's a Parsecs game. It needs to be, kind of feel the same. So it's just
would you say that there's, you know, it does help with the learning curve if you already have, like, most of the combat nailed down anyway, and other familiar elements from 5 Parsecs?
Yeah, because then the campaign is big and much more complicated. This is easily the most, like, involved and complicated game I've done, I think. So being able to have, like, a baseline, if you throw in, like, okay, the campaign works completely differently, all of these things work differently, but the tactical environment where you put your characters down and move them around and their survival mostly works the same, I think that makes it a lot easier to kind of get to grips with, because you have, like, a grounding on it. Now that can catch people out, because sometimes there's, like, stuff that, because it's so similar, you don't notice that, like, something has actually changed. You know, like how a lot of people got caught out by the fact that in Tactics you have to roll over toughness to kill somebody when it's equal to in Parsecs. Which in hindsight, that was probably a bad, dumb idea, but here we are.
I always played it that way anyway. I'm like, I always forget that it could be equal or over. I always think over.
Yeah,
easy mode, maybe, you know?
Should have been over all along, because characters were a little too squishy. But that's one of those things you don't realize until, like, 1,000 people tell you that characters die too fast or something. Do you want to read the
yeah,
next
absolutely.
More comment? Yes.
Yeah, we have another new viewer, David Ebert Coleman, 8610. Greetings from Vienna, Austria. Just finished a game of Maladum before listening in. Nice. The sci-fi predecessor to of Maladum, Core Space, led me to 5 Parsecs and now Planetfall.
Hey, yeah, we used to joke that Core Space was like the official terrain expansion for 5 parsecs for a long time. Because for a while it seemed like everyone on YouTube was using the course based stuff. Which admittedly is like really cool. So yeah, glad you're liking it. And I think it's a lot of these games, because there's so many of them now, I think they all like do slightly different things. I think there's very few people who exclusively play one. I think people play one for like a while. With like that's you mostly play parsecs, you mostly play whatever. And then, you know, you kind of like want a slightly different experience. You move on to a different one. I think that's how it's kind of it works best. Like, I think all these games do different enough things that you can kind of you can pick up different and have different experience. You don't get stuck doing the same thing over and over.
Mm-hmm.
So what I really wonder is how many people are like super hardcore so that they have completely different sets of miniatures for each campaign game they play. Because that's like, you know, because there's a lot of people who are kind of using these games as like an excuse for what to paint next. So,
yeah.
You know, like new game, I got to paint brand new dudes. Oh, dear. Off to the website we go.
Yeah. It's one of the fun parts. I'm like, okay, new campaign, new minis.
Yeah. Like a different kind of space pirate. Yeah. Oh, boy.
Yeah. Or the alternative when you have like a mini that's been out of rotation for a few years. You're like, oh, I get to bring that guy back.
Oh, yeah. No, that's totally. I've seen that with for a while when all of those games came out that were trying to like be the new home for Warhammer Fantasy Battle players. Mm-hmm. And there would be a lot of people who dig out like an old general miniature or something that they hadn't used in a long time because whatever, they had changed or a new model was better or something. So they would bring out like their old favorite like guy.
Yeah.
Because now you can use him in the new rules.
Yeah, he's not out of production and out of rules anymore.
Yeah. He can be anything you want. So when it comes to like the dude you're shooting at, it's fairly ambitious because there are 3 groups. You have tactical enemies, which are that's kind of your standard like parsecs type of enemies. They show up with guns and, you know, they fight you in firefights. They're kind of some of them are like straight off, you know, I can't find the list now. Some of them are straight off the standard like, if you have Parsec's enemies already, you already have guys, like, you can use.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to find the table. Okay, so, like, some of them are, like, nomads, hostile colonists, pirates, so on, Karin landing parties and stuff. These are the kind of guys you're already used to seeing. They show up with rifles and bazookas or whatever, and you are fighting them. They have more of a presence in the campaign. Instead of meeting different groups each time, over the course of the campaign, you will fight 3 types of them. You could end up, like, it turns out it's all of them pirates, but statistically, like, you know, you'll end up. So you might first have the planet, like, some pirates show up and land. Then you have a hostile colonist group that shows up. You know, they've either tried to muzzle in on you or they've actually defected from your colony or something. But you actually have to carry out missions to gather intel on them so that you can hunt down one of their leaders, kill him, find where the boss is or their base is, and then go kick them off the planet.
Nice.
So it's a little more of a, it's reminiscent in principle of like how the enemies work in leagues, but more, there are more specific steps that you're kind of taking. And they can, of course, get in your business. The main thing is that they can shit on your resources because areas that are occupied by tactical enemies can't carry out other missions there. You have to chase them off. So at some point you have to kind of contend with them. And to complete the campaign, you do have to kick at least some of them out. You can't have a bunch of hooligans kicking over all the bus signs and stuff.
Too many squatters.
The second enemy is the Slinn. I wanted to have like one new alien, but it had to be something that was a little bit separate for reasons I'll explain shortly. So the Slinn are basically like sonic lizard weirdos who show up to also kick over the bus signs. And they are basically like an invading force. So throughout the campaign, they will show up sort of at random and interfere with what you're doing. So you're undertaking a mission, you may end up being attacked by them instead. And they also give you like something interesting that's they're kind of meant as a thing that you might have to like model or kitbash a little bit for, because there's not that many like sci-fi lizardmen figures out there. You might just use some fantasy lizardmen, chop off the swords. That's fine. So they're kind of like the alien mystery, I suppose. And then
I think OPR might have a perfect set for that that just came out.
Oh, they might. The trend of either them or the Stargrave dudes producing perfect things for Parsecs.
Yep, that's right. Ooh, we hit the double digits.
Hell yeah.
10 to 99. Woo-woo.
All right. Now we're on the, now we're on the long haul. Now it's time to start fucking exercising and like lifting cars and getting roided up. Get the roid rage going.
It's time to tease a little more spaceship action, but never deliver.
It's like showing a cleavage on a live stream. So you got to get them thinking that it could happen.
Yeah.
So the last enemy type is the life forms. These are basically the animals that live on the planet already. And ironically, so if you've seen Deep Below, where you kind of roll up these sort of stats and profile for each enemy you face, that system was written for Planetfall, but because Planetfall was in like editing for so long, the Deep Below version showed up first. But it's the same sort of thing. So you will basically roll up, like each time you encounter a creature that you haven't done before, you will roll up the profile for it. Now that's on your encounter table. So at the end of the campaign, you will have, I forget if there's 8 or 10 entries on it, but you will have 8 or 10 creatures that are pretty unique to your world. Sometimes that'll be complete chaos. Sometimes you will end up like rolling multiple creatures that have something in common. That's just how it works. They can also evolve over the campaign. As you progress in the campaign, they actually get tougher. You can counteract that a little bit because you can also research specific life forms to find like a weakness form. They're probably like the less dangerous type of enemy because they tend to, in missions involving life forms, they tend to use blips for moving around. So if you're a little clever, you can kind of avoid or control the blips a little bit, you know, avoid some of the combat. But yeah, so that's the three like types of foes. Now the life forms, because they specifically don't say anything about the appearance of the creature, that's the thing where for the guys who like, and girls, and undecideds, who like to pick out miniatures, who like to kit bash things, or like to find some like toy store lizards and paint them up differently, you know, like this is all for you guys, you know. Like I think for like space pirates or something, most people are inclined to find some miniatures that are pretty close to where you want them to be and maybe just paint them a different way. You kit bash a little, but for like alien monster, like go fucking nuts, like So yeah, there's a wide array. In hindsight, maybe putting 3 different types of enemies. Plus, there's also like the sleepers were like sentry robots in the alien ruins, but they show up. That's more like a mission feature. So yeah, maybe that's over ambitious, but that's kind of like the theme for all of Planetfall. There's just like so fucking much of it. So yeah, statistically, you can't really compare it because like I forget how many entries there are on the 5 Parsecs encounter table. It's like probably 40 or 50 or so. But because the life forms are procedurally generated, it's one of those like you put on the back of the book or something, like 8 million different combinations. But like realistically, they boil down to like a lot fewer, you know, like weak, fast enemy who flies and weak, fast enemy who jumps aren't like, you know. So with that, I guess the next logical step is research and base building, which is kind of like what everyone is creaming their pants for. So the base building is very straightforward. There's a big ass list of buildings and you accumulate points. At the start of the campaign, you will accumulate points so fucking slow that you will probably send me hate mail. Then you'll realize that if you gather resources from missions, that lets you rush some buildings through faster, and you can build things that let you build things faster. So there's kind of like a logic to it. I'm sure like tedious nerds will figure out the optimal sequence or whatever. Like, but if you're not a tedious nerd, then just kind of go with it. But yeah, there's a lot. I don't know if I counted them actually. But there's quite a lot of things you can construct in your base. Some of which give you. I'm gonna find some examples here. See, if you were good at this, I would have like prepared like specific, you know, examples.
Ooh,
yeah. So like
if on the screen.
Exactly, but we're not good at this. So we're just rolling with it. Plus, the people who are podcasting it can't see it anyway. So, like, if you build the bot maintenance bay, you can now, if your like combat robot gets damaged, you no longer have to waste a turn. He's good to go next turn. So that's great. You can build a colony shield network, which means when your colony takes damage, it mitigates some of that damage. That's nice. you can build military barracks, which means all of your troopers get a little XP boost, including the new ones brought in, because now you like teach them which end of the gun goes towards the enemy.
Yeah, yeah.
So some of them will give you bonuses in combat situations. A lot of them will give you bonuses, obviously, in the campaign environment. And some are kind of one-off. So if you build, like, there's a recreational facility to let everyone, like, watch movies, which will improve your morale, and you get a story point out of it. So some of them will just give you, like, a one-off bonus, and some will benefit the campaign in some way. So you can kind of... The campaign can go like for a really long time, so I think some players will try to build everything. Some people will just kind of focus on like what they need to get to where they're trying to go. That can kind of go. There are also certain milestone buildings that contribute to like the end game, but we'll cover that.
Okay.
We have a big ass tech tree, and this actually our port editor, Rich, put some fantastic work into putting this tech tree in like. Like you could turn this into a poster because it looks like something that would be in like Civilization, like box set or something.
Oh, nice.
But it works the same way. You're accumulating points both based on what buildings you have, what resources you're gathering, and things you do in missions. And so you develop a theory. So like environmental adaptation is a theory. So once you have that, you can then start developing these specific, I think we call them applications. So each theory has like four or five specific things you can now research and you get those bonuses. But you don't get to pick and choose because scientists are boffins and will come up with random stuff. So occasionally you can tell them like, I want to research a application in environmental adaptation, but you'll then roll randomly to see which of the benefits you actually get until you have all of them.
Okay.
So they might come out with the idea of, okay, well, we've built this thing, so now you can build a new building. Some of them will give you bonuses to certain things. A lot of them make weapons available to you, which is always nice. You get to upgrade your kit and your gear for that mission. Some will give you new buildings. Some are like one-time advantages and stuff, or combat advantages. Like you can get a bonus. So your combat robots get upgraded to be faster and deadlier, which... that probably won't backfire for humanity in the future. But again, yeah. So it's kind of a, like, it's a very Civilization style, like, tech tree sort of thing. Because I just thought that was the easiest. There's so many ways you can do this. In the end, like, ticking off points. And when you have enough points, you get the thing, which is the easiest way to do it. And the most, like, recognizable. Again, with such a big, complex game, I wanted it to be so that a lot of the concepts were, like, easy to understand. So everyone can understand, like, if you played video games, like, if you're accumulating research points, and when you have enough, you get the thing.
Yeah.
So the really cool thing you get is genetic augmentations. Certain things you develop will give you augmentation points. And the cost keeps going up, but they let you actually modify your colonist to fit in this, like, new world. So, and they, of course, give you mostly combat benefits. So, like, if you give everyone enhanced vision, whenever you have a mission with limited visibility, you get to add 3 inches to it. You can get psionic cohesion, which actually reduces the chance of your characters becoming disloyal towards the colony administration, which is not creepy at all. So the idea is that as you play, your colonists become more and more like genetically adjusted to like the world they live on. In the setting, biotech is like super advanced, so you can sort of edit people's like genetics. On top of that, you also have like huge piles. There's a bunch of alien artifacts you can get, which you have to delve into like alien sites that you track down and so on. They give you a bunch of advantages. And of course, like I said, there's actual like new weapons and equipment you can research and outfit your guys with. And those are also split out among the character classes. So for example, if you... So like if you're a scientist, you can develop the mind link pistol. This is very dumb. But it's basically a pistol that lets you use your savvy skill instead of combat skill. Since scientists are big old nerds, so they invent a pistol that is easier to shoot if you're smart. Some are kind of usable by everybody.
Not for dummies.
Yeah. Like this you, sir, can have the idiot pistol.
Yeah.
So, if you like technobabble, there is an enormous amount of technobabble in this book. I think I had originally planned on just calling all the alien artifacts by like letters. You get like Artifact B and Artifact K, and the editor was like, this is the dumbest idea. Come up with something. So now they all have like convoluted technobabble names, which is better, I'll admit. But definitely some of them I don't really know. I was trying to make them so technobabble that it was actually kind of hard to like, it would be open-ended for you to decide what it really is. So
they like generate the metaphysic frequencies on the oscillosphere.
Yeah, it's that sort of thing. Like some of them are like a little more obvious, but like if you can figure out what a bioframe optimization theorem looks like, then that's good for you. I don't know.
We could have an episode of just reading out these descriptions.
Yeah. So there's a few that are a little, but yeah. So there's the one that I was really proud of was the inherent core principle carbine, which is just a gun. That's good, but whatever inherent core principles are and why they make guns go better, that's up to you. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff. And on that stuff, I think we have Psychic Hazard has a comment on it.
Yeah. He says, all the reference sheets, tech trees, etc. are very well done and probably absolutely essential.
Yes. It was definitely a grind to playtest off just the massive document. You need to print out the ref sheets and stuff. And that'll kind of get you.
Yeah.
This is a game where there's no way of like avoiding that. Yeah, there is some paperwork to do. There's lots of ticking off boxes and stuff like that. But yeah. I don't think there's a way of doing this sort of experience in this grand way. Again, Deep Below players get to see like a tiny, tiny version because you could get structures in that game and you could, but it was on a very like tiny way. This is like the full enchilada. Nice. And I can probably safely say, oh, go ahead.
That was Little Brother's tech tree there.
Yeah, I was just like, okay, these ideas are like in the pool now. So here's like a tidy little version of it. I can probably say that I don't think I'm in a rush to do anything that's this complex. I don't want to say complicated, but like it's complex. There's a lot here. Definitely not in a hurry to do something that is that involved again. The next thing will be a little tidier. I guess that brings us to the end. By which I mean the end game, because there is an end game now, which is, I think, well, I guess Buck Hunt, you do have like an operation can come to a conclusion. But this time, the campaign ends. It's somewhat self-paced. There are certain milestones you have to achieve to progress the campaign. And when you do, things happen that then progress the campaign. So it's this whole idea that the world sort of like responds to you. And as you're going along to the right section here, it also reacts to you in certain ways. So there, of the milestones, there are some of them are research items that you can. So as you're understanding the world better, that kind of progresses. There is an alien artifact. One of the like genetic augmentations give you a milestone. And several of them are for building. So you have kind of control over when you want to progress the campaign. So when you progress the campaign, achieve one of these milestones, then things happen. So like there are calamities, which are big threats to your colony that will, it's kind of a counter for those that takes up. Tactical enemies will invade the planet at various points. Alien life forms will evolve to become more obnoxious. If you progress long enough, at some point, the Slin will finally decide that enough of them have been shot and they should go somewhere else. So you also get to a point where like the tactical enemies, if you haven't kicked them out yet, they start like loading up more guns and stuff. But in the end, you will get to a point where you are ready to like finish it off. Once you do that, there's four different ways that the end game can kind of work. They each have different requirements for you to reach them, and they have kind of like different like levels of risk. And I'm actually I will mention the base one, which is independent, or not independence. We'll just do that one, because that's the one everyone... It's not the default, but it's the one everyone like immediately thinks of first, which is that your colony is big enough now, and so you basically get a choice at that point, if that's what you want to go for. You have to build some things, because everyone starts building gun turrets and digging trenches, and you have to spend some more research, because they have to figure out how to make their own canned food or whatever. So you can declare that at that point, the campaign is just over. You decide how that goes. If you don't do that, then there's a role with possibly some modifiers, and Unity might recognize your status. they might go to war with you, in which case there's a little subsystem for that, or they might just like nuke the colony from orbit and start over. So there's a chance. Of the four endings, three of them can end horribly. Well, the fourth one, which is just you do what you're sent to do. You build a productive unity colony, and then you get a promotion to being a, you know, paper pusher somewhere in an office. There's no risk involved there, because that's just what you're there to do. The other two can be a lot more spacey and weird, and I think people will appreciate those. But they do have the risk that you might not make it if you choose those. That's why each of them will say, like, if you don't want that risk, you just want to say, like, we made it this far. I've had played 50 turns of this campaign, and I want it to end well. You can just say it ended well. You don't have to roll and realize because you rolled a double one, like, the whole colony got, like, laser from orbit. Yeah, so, but yeah.
That reminds me of something. Yeah, I think.
You once ruled the realms with dice and a sword, painted goblins till tea, then your minis were stored. You grew up, got a job, bought a flat, wore a tie, swapped dragons for deadlines, your brushes went dry. Now the dishes are done and the kids are in bed. You climb to the attic to raise the undead. Crack open the paints that you swore you'd outgrown. The smell of acrylic, it feels like your home. There's grey in your beard, even more on your head, but you're splashing some colour on plastic and lead. So welcome back, General. What took you so long? Your hobby's still here. It's the place you belong. The Bedroom Battlefields Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast. Find it at bedroombattlefields.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
It reminds me of something, too, where you can kind of choose, oh yeah, like life, the game of life.
Oh, yeah,
like choose like the easy mode, or you can kind of like, you know, go all in.
Yeah.
See what happens.
And it was one of those where, like, because there's a certain kind of player who like loves the idea that, okay, we tried to like fight a galactic, you know, military power and died, and that's cool. But there's another kind of player who would like be pretty sour if they got to that point and then like the whole thing was for nothing, you know?
Yeah.
So it's the journey, not the destination, but it. That doesn't necessarily apply. So I want to just say, like, hey, you can, if you want to just have everyone, like, chill out as space pirates, that's fine. And there's a few notes. If you want to bring your world into then Five Parks from Home campaign, you can do that. Your characters are still around if they didn't get arrested for, like, being rebels or something. Mm-hmm. So there's specific things you can get out of each of the, they're toned down a little bit, but yeah, so you can bring those characters over, and they actually get like a small bonus. Like if you, you get a little bit of extra story points, some character advantages, and there's a couple of things that are left mysterious. Like the Slynn alien invasion is never like resolved. You just like fight them off. So there's some questions for you to figure out as a player. You know, like why were they there? Did they just get tired? Did they achieve what they wanted? Whatever you want to do. So that's kind of the, like, the shape of things, I guess. Mostly in, like, how it differs from 5 Parsecs. I'm kind of assuming if you're listening to this, you either have played Parsecs or you know enough from, like, reading about it or watching on YouTube that you have an idea how the campaign goes. So this was more, like, where it is different from how it works. Also, the art is all... I think there's one or two pieces that got recycled. But most of the artwork is brand new and really quite gorgeous. Somebody was pointing out that with each book, the art gets like more specific and sharper, which is actually true. That wasn't like necessarily planned. But it's interesting that they, as the games go by, they kind of become a little more specific. And then the art gets a little more like specific as well. So the 5 Parsecs from Home art is very kind of sketchy and open-ended.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the character. It has that sort of, I don't know what to call it because it looks nice, but like loose quality. And your character can be like anybody.
Agnostic, I guess.
Yeah, it's like, it has that vibe, right? Like, it kind of could be anyone. And then, like, for Buck Hunt, it was like more specific, but they're also kind of faceless grunts. And now this time, it's like more specific again, like, which is like how everything was ruined, I suppose. I did want to talk, because I was talking to somebody on the Discord about it, who's mentioning the art. So I want to just talk about, like, how the art, like, really gets done. Because the way it's always worked for each book we've done is that I will set down, like, here's sort of the basic steps of, like, what Parsec's art must or must not look like, and what League's art must or must not look like. So for League's, it's, like, as little Warcraft as possible, and for Parsec's, it's, like, try to keep the number of swords to, like, a reasonable minimum. Or a reasonable maximum, rather. and then, like, I'll send over some visual examples of, like, okay, this thing sort of looks like this. This thing sort of looks like this. Then usually we'll set, I'll usually do between 10 and maybe 20 scenes, and they are like super basic. So a scene is like squad of soldiers moving through a valley, aliens lurking in the jungle. Like that's usually my boss, Chris Birch, will do. Oh, hey, Lancelot. We'll do a bunch more.
Yeah.
Because he's really good at that. But they go over to the artist, and then basically the artist will kind of like go through, and so we give them pretty free rein on like filling in the details with that, like within like certain character types and stuff like that. Like it has to fit the overall brief, but the artist gets like a huge, because that's super important for me that the guy doing the art, like he gets his own sort of input in it. And sometimes that means that the art is a little different from what I envisioned. But again, that's kind of like, I want that where the artist has like, you can feel that there's like a human, you know, sitting there doing stuff. And other times it feeds back because like originally you weren't going to be able to take a soulless character, the sort of robot race. But we had a bunch of art where they were in the artwork. So we decided last minute, we're going to put in a little sidebar saying you can have a soulless advisor. And he has like a couple of rules for that. Nice. Just because they in the art and the art look good. So sometimes the art can inform the game. Like it feeds back in. Sometimes it's the first way around. yes, he's lonely.
Yeah, Lancelot needs it right now.
Yes.
Give me that hand.
Oh, no, I know what it is. It's 4 o'clock and he has been excessively patient, not killing me for lunch.
Oh, yes.
So, yeah, this is the... Usually from 2 o'clock, he just starts begging incessantly because 3 o'clock is dinner time. All right, you need to... You're being too much. He's like, no.
Nope.
So, yeah, that's kind of the process with the art. Sometimes I'll get... As it goes on, I usually get like a collection of like random pieces just to get like the vibe of it. And we'll kind of pick through like, because there'll be like pieces like, oh my God, that is so good. We have to use that. And there'll be others like, okay, that kind of doesn't work. You know, the guy will go back. I don't have anything to do with like the moment to moment, like, oh, this sword needs to be like 20 degrees higher up or anything like that. Now he's attacking my keyboard. You are being an asshole.
Well, that's perfect timing because Baron Hambutt just asks, which sections did the cat write?
Oh, yeah. Any numbers that are wrong are probably, Lancelot is probably to blame for that. So I guess if there's any obvious questions, this is probably a good time for the double digit viewers.
Yeah.
To have if anyone has some questions, either about Planetfall or, I guess, just NWG stuff in general. We can touch that a little bit. Or BiffCast questions.
Yeah, or us.
So the problem with asking questions about the podcast is that we plan zero episodes in advance.
Yeah, and so, we have no goals. There's zero goals.
Yeah, like it's very... I think the reason it's worked so long is that because it's kind of open-ended, so it's like on 2 days before we can decide, okay, this is the topic we want to do, and then we just kind of go.
Yeah, keep it relevant.
So now if people want to make suggestions... He like launched himself onto the table and he almost didn't make it.
All right. It's Lancelot o'clock.
Yes. You could go ask mom for food. I am not the only one who can feed you.
You look the most qualified for the job.
Yeah. Well, the worst thing is she's downstairs, which is also where the cat food is.
Oh.
But I think she's at work, so she's not putting up with this nonsense.
No.
I suppose there's some terrain generation tables. They're not really that exciting to talk about. But for people who like want to like, oh, okay, this area is like plants with lots of high ground and there's alien crystals or something. Like, you can build that up. Some people, I always have a hard time with that because a lot of people ask for stuff like that. But I never use anything like that. Like I literally just put crap on the table. Yeah. So it's like, you have to put yourself in the mind of, like, what does a person who isn't you want out of a feature that you would never use? So I hope they're okay. You know, people seem to like them, but...
And Baron Hembutt does ask, how did you find writing all the flavor stuff? And let's point out, he spelled it Falavor, which I think sounds pretty great.
But yeah, not, that of course, makes me kind of hungry, actually. I don't think there were any of these in Parsecs originally. In Leagues, we started putting in, like, little text bits, like half a page or something, with like a couple of characters talking to each other and stuff like that.
Yeah. Kind of like 2E, right? Like, that's when you started adding that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And then Planetfall has a couple more, quite a few more, actually. I don't think I'm, like, really good at writing prose. That's not really, like, my vibe. But I find that if it's, like, a page, I can kind of get into, like, I would be, if I had to, like, write stories with people, I would be, like, you would get a book with, like, 800 short stories and they're all 4 pages long.
Oh, yeah.
That's like as long as I find an idea, like, interesting. But yeah, I had a lot of fun writing those because it was a way of, like, showcasing. They're not really intended to be, like, background information. They're really more intended to be, like, vibes of, like, here are some things that people in this situation would be dealing with. So, like, here's a scout who's exploring, like, a ruin. Here's somebody fighting, like, alien actors and stuff. And yeah, it's fun to, like, you get to create a character for, like, a little bit and then let them go. I did, this is one of the things that I always argue with the editor about, because I always want to, like, leave the characters unnamed, and he always wants a name for the characters. So any of them that are named, that was, like, literal last minute, but, you know. That's the kind of thing. When you're dealing with an editor, especially an editor who's really good and really patient, you kind of pick your battles. There's things I care really strongly about, and there's things that, like, okay, that's fine. Let's do the thing you want to do. Keeps the relationship.
Before I go to Psychic Hazard's comment, I just wanted to say, I was thinking earlier, I mean, Modiphius is building the IP, so they do need specific things to really, like, ground it now. And it's not just an open concept. They kind of grabbed you with the open concept, and now they got to bring you in.
Yeah.
To the refined hamburger.
Yeah, there's, like, two parts to that. Because on one hand, they are very committed to it being agnostic and people being able to use their own minis. And that means it has to be, like, pretty open. But at the same time, there's also, like, people want to be able to buy, like, minis and, you know, stuff like that they can kind of use. And there are people, I always bring this up, but, like, every time I survey this online, it's like a third of the players want to use the setting. Like, they're very big into, like, the setting and the lore and how things work. And a third of them are, like, mixing it up. They take some of the parts and put their own stuff. And then a third of them are just playing, like, Star Trek or Warhammer.
Yeah.
So you have to, like, balance it out. And I think having different games do it in different ways, because I couldn't imagine Planetfall is probably the most, like, specific feeling of the games now, because once you start bringing in, like, okay, what kind of buildings do they make, what kind of technology do they develop, what kind of, you know, like, that has to be more specific, whereas my guys are fighting some space pirates in a docking bay, that can kind of happen in any setting.
Yeah.
So I think it's interesting that they each end up. So maybe if we do spaceships at some point, we'll kind of wing it back and it'll be more open-ended again. That's one of those.
Maybe. So yeah, Psychic Hazard says, Modiphius should release STLs for the vehicles and buildings in the artwork. Probably true. Probably true.
Nobody has talked about that, but that could be very likely. I know they are very big on doing STLs for stuff. And yeah, that would be really cool, especially some vehicle kits, because then we could also do, like, tactic stats for them.
Yeah, and then Baron Hembutt says, no plans for Unity novels then?
I would like to say yes or no, but that really just depends on, like, I think if it was going to happen, it would probably be, like, a short story collection instead. We are looking at, and this is just on my end, doing some short stories, little fiction bits that would go on Patreon to just kind of feel the waters a little bit.
Yeah, that'd be sweet. And then Noise says, there he is. What I find fun of those flavor texts is that they're situations. What happened prior and where it will go is unstated. And so very fun and inspiring to have that short glance.
Yes, that is. Noist is obviously like my seventh favorite person in the whole world. but yeah, that is exactly the point. You get to like pull out a, and I really like doing that because I like people to like put together, like, why are these people here? What made this situation come about? You can, maybe that doesn't matter to you, or maybe you want to like sit and think about that and throw in, like, sometimes you're throwing little things, like you can reference that we are here because we were, got a job from the XXX like corporation or something, but like, is, yeah, that, he gets it exactly. Like, it's, it is a situation, and it's meant to just give you that vibe of that. I always found stories that start you in the middle of a thing, like, really exciting and interesting, because it gets you thinking about like what came before and where does this go.
Yeah. And then Psychic Hazard says, I visualize the characters and the flavor text as the minis I've painted.
Oh, okay. That is a really cool idea. We originally had this idea from, because in the original Parsecs book, all the characters, there's kind of like a recurring set of characters to show up in the artwork. And I don't know, because we gave them stats and everything, but I don't know if people like actually ever use those or if that was just like a thing.
And then Noise says, is there really a Noise in the book? And I think we know the answer. He's right on the cover of the first one.
Yeah.
It's that little shorter pad right there. It's his little face.
Yeah. That's immortalized.
So. Yeah, he got it. I think it's on the cover.
It is, yeah. So, I mean, he knows that he is in every Squad Hammer book. He is actually the 2d6. When you roll those, you're rolling Noise.
Yeah. One's the hair and one's the rock.
Exactly. You know, and plus he might be one of the people who actually look at the music playlist I put in. So, although I think it's not quite to his, although I think for this one of Planetfall, the, we mostly just copied the same list because there's not really a lot of like colonization heavy metal albums. But yeah, if you want the official soundtrack to play 5 Parsecs by, also this is like heavily influenced by whatever I was listening to at that particular moment. It is the band Dune, DBNE, which is kind of like spacey ambient wall of sound prog metal. Okay. It is so weird that my wife, who normally doesn't like extreme metal, like really enjoy it. The album Asheron is just fantastic to listen to. It's Slaufeg, the Traveler album, obviously. If you're a sci-fi minis gamer and you don't listen to that, you are missing out. It's a very classic style, like Manila Road style. If you listen to any like classic metal and enjoy it, you should listen to Slaufeg. It's a band called Misceration. They are like pretty extreme, like technical death metal, but the album The Mirroring Shadow is like a really good one. Pick any Gary Numan album that you like. I really like Savage. So that's kind of my favorite, but you can't go wrong. Then any amount of like V&V Nation, Covenant, stuff like that. I guess they call it future pop. And then some classic video game soundtracks like Command & Conquer and Unreal Tournament. A lot of those. So actually you can get I think both the Command & Conquer and the Red Alert soundtracks are on like Apple Music now. So you can just go stream them. They're really good. They hold up like fun. I don't know if the Unreal Tournament ones are, but they're on YouTube, if you look. But yeah, that's like the official kind of playlist for like Parsecs vibes. I guess the soundtracks for the Turrican computer games.
Oh, yeah.
From back in them days, if you're old enough to be cool.
So cool. Yeah. You played on a 486 and you thought it was brand new?
Yeah, nah, this is like Amiga and Commodore 64. Vibes. Yeah. Like 486, that's too new. You're already not cool.
Yeah.
Just although there are at least two direct shout outs to Doom in 5 Parsecs. So there's not that many Easter eggs this time. There's a few, but I was just kind of not in the. I wasn't consciously like trying to put them in. I usually try to put Easter eggs in where it's sort of like. Feels fun and it feels natural. So I guess it just wasn't that many opportunities for them this time. So
Psychic Hazard did say that they were happy to see a change. He suggested it played in the playtest appear in the book.
Yeah. This is one of those things that you don't want to get carried away with because then people start thinking that if they make suggestions and tell you you're wrong about things that you will listen to them. We don't want that to become a regular thing, right?
Yeah.
So you got to throw them a bone like once in a while. So, oh, and you know, you can tell the book is long because the designer notes are a page and a half now.
Wow.
Yeah, I have played actual games that had less text than the designer notes here. Designer notes is one of those weird things because, like, some people get, like, you know, who are rules nerds really like that stuff because they want, like, in-depth analysis of why things happen. Other people just kind of want to. I don't know. Like, I think a lot of people just never read that part, and there's other people who read that in every book they buy.
Oh, yeah.
But it's, like, a way of saying, like, it's, like, a way of, like, thanking people for, like, okay, you read the whole fucking thing. Like, let me talk to you directly. Here's some things. There is a bunch of extra, like, fluff text. So if you're into that, obviously you do get a little bit of just a recap of the setting for people who haven't been there the whole time. There's some new bits that I don't think has shown up before. There's a big section about colonies, because that's obviously like the purpose of the game. There's a little extra section about like how the Unity fleet works and stuff like that. So if you want to like piece together a little bit more of like the real 5 Parsecs, I said before, there's some differences between like Parsecs, the unified space in my head, and unified space in the books. But
yeah,
like one of the things we do try to do is make sure as much as possible that whatever goes on the page is consistent with what's come before. And we don't like to contradict something. That wasn't the case prior to the glossy book. If you look at like, because Clash in the Fringe was set in unified space. There's been other games too, and before that, they have never been like consistent. It has always been like different things could look different in each version of the game. There were just sort of like different ideas about this. But since Parsecs is one big game in a way, I wanted it to be consistent and to be like it all fit together and it all felt in a. Now I'm sure some shit got missed somewhere because that's how it works. But
yeah, you don't have your big book of Unity Primer yet.
yeah. So there's technically a bit of a setting Bible, but it's incomplete. but yeah, so I use it mostly as a place to like pick things out of that I can then put forward somewhere.
And then, okay, I'm going to attempt a name. Rudolf. Got it. Elegierski. Maybe. 3043. Mentioned to Baron Hamut on the Discord that the planet follows everything he hoped it would be.
Hey.
And then he popped up in chat.
All right. No, that is phenomenal. I'm glad. I think this is one of those games where a lot of people have been waiting for something like this. There's also, like, you're always nervous when you put something out. Like, if you've created something, anyone who, like, knows, plays music, or if you've written something, you built something, if you, like, you get nervous about, like, showing it out in the world, because, like,
yeah,
you know all the imperfections, and you know. And there's always, like, if you're churning out, the PDF I have is 200 pages. So I don't remember the word count. It's north of 70,000 words. There's going to be something that got fucked up. There's going to be like an error somewhere. There's going to be a thing that isn't explained properly or isn't explained well. Like, I think and I hope this is the kind of game where like the amount of like scope and stuff and the fact that I don't really know if anyone else has done this. Like, we kind of get to like corner the mark a little bit. I think that will like pull a lot of people along and kind of get them. You know, I think people will buy into the vibe. I hope so. And certainly, I think the artwork will help people get the vibe because they really did a phenomenal job. A lot of like really evocative.
Rudolf just got to the part where you're speaking about the art.
Hey.
So it's perfect. Oh. So that means by the time we end this podcast, they'll never know that I didn't say their name correct.
Yeah, by the time it'll be off air, like, what? That is absolutely not how it's said in Hungarian or whatever, wherever the gentleman is from.
What is this gibbering fool doing?
Yeah.
And Noyes says, don't spoil when Lancelot travels to David's, though.
That is true. I was going to say he's a well-traveled cat, but he isn't actually. The furthest he's gone was from Michigan to Indiana, because we got him in Michigan. I always forget. Our two previous cats had traveled from Oregon all the way to Michigan, so they were well-traveled.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, Mittens had traveled from Vermont to Oregon and then to Michigan. So that is... I don't know if there's like a list of like the top 100 most traveled cats, but in America, but she would definitely have been like on there.
Nice. So,
yeah. The first trip from Vermont to Oregon was in a car. Like, she was in her carrier in the car every single day while we were driving. And she looked really good. But yeah, Lancelot has only gone in one state, and he did not like that one bit.
Speaking of traveling animals, we had a neighbor once a long time ago when we lived in some apartments, and his dog, he said it was a street dog from the Ukraine.
How did he get it here?
I don't know. It came from the Ukraine, and why?
I guess if the dog got a ticket, he can just go on like a Lufthansa or something.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I got nothing. Just told me back here. Let's just go.
Yeah, let's go to Calgary. Like, why not? He's done with his education, and you know, there's bombs everywhere. So yeah, Calgary sounds pretty good.
Well, it was before all that.
Oh, okay. So
yeah, the good old days, you might say.
Yeah, well, you know, this is pretty common with dogs, I think. Like, they get their education, they kind of work a job for a little bit, and then they're like, you know what? I could just go somewhere else. You know, maybe I'll be a bartender in Canada.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know.
Why not?
Could have been a cab driver in New York, could have been juvenile delinquent in Paris, but here we are. So it's important to have ambitions.
Oh. Psychic Hazard brought up something actually that was kind of on my mind while you were talking as well.
Mm-hmm.
He says, looking forward to Peachy doing a Planetfall campaign. And my related question would be, who do you think would represent Planetfall best on all the YouTubers?
Oh, no.
Who could really sell that campaign?
Yeah, that's dangerous, because if I say one, then I didn't say all the other ones, right?
Yeah. You could do top three. Why not?
Yeah. I think, okay, I'm going to base this question on who do I hear about the most when somebody says they discovered the game, because like I get a fair amount of emails from people saying, hey, blah blah blah, you know, they're just writing me, so let no, and they will often mention if they watch the video and that kind of into it. So Peach is definitely like one of those top three, because I think he's so like personable and like engaging and he's very sort of enthusiastic. He's one of those people who does everything to like 100%. I think the hobby homies show up quite a lot. Both from like vibes, they just have like good vibes, but also like they obviously have like their own community. So I think people get kind of brought in that sense as well. And then I would say, although he's doing different things like every so often, I would say when me, myself, and Di, I always forget the name, Trevor or something.
Trevor Duvall, yeah.
Yeah. I shouldn't forget his name because he's like a famous guy, like he's a voice actor and stuff.
Reasonably famous.
Yeah. Like when he did his, that got like a ton of people introduced. So I would say it would be those three. And that's no shame to anybody else. That's just like with anything online, it's like if the guy's a little famous, that makes it easier to become a lot famous because now the system will start recommending your videos and stuff. Like there are some really cool guys who are slaving along to like 50 views, but they're doing like effects and music and overlays and stuff. So
yeah.
Like, and that shit is like the real, you know, like I don't want to say that like the likes of like the hobby homies are like over commercial or something, because they obviously aren't, but like the real shit is like some guy sitting and playing games and for 50 viewers. Like that's the true like indie spirit. That's like what any kind of scene, whatever you want to call it. You know, that's the people who keep it alive. So if that's you, or if you're streaming to double digit numbers.
Well, we were, but we lost the cat, we lost the numbers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's how it goes.
And now he's laid down. Now he's just like angrily napping, just off shot.
That's what I do when I'm hungry. I'm just angrily napping.
If biting people didn't help get a sandwich, then just chill out. And now his feet are hanging off the edge, so I can't use my mouse.
Yeah.
Because he gets mad every time I touch his foot.
Yeah. I never watched the videos. So I've never actually seen anyone's production quality until like one day I was watching the Hoppy Homies Batman. I'm like, oh, wow, this is actually good. They're not just funny.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of.
Yeah, they really.
Yeah, there's a lot of dude. I mean, you get a lot who just, I forget the channel name. There was somebody I was watching. They must have played Bolt Action at the time. And they was literally just like point a camera at the table and we play a game.
Yeah.
Like it was a little more organized. Like they didn't have like the long digressions about like goblin dicks or whatever that you normally have with your friends. So they were trying to be a little more presentable, but it was basically just here's us playing a game and yada yada. And then you get the people who will do, you know, they do like music and sound effects, like laser blasts and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, so you kind of get like a wide range. I think people also interest in different things. Some people want that like immersive vibe from it. Some people just want to see like, oh, the dude rolled a six. Holy shit. You know.
Yep. What? A six? Oh, that dice?
And some guys are just in the comments to complain when somebody gets the rules wrong.
Yeah, that's right.
I guess that's a big issue for the dudes who are like streaming like D&D games and stuff, because you know, you'll get rules wrong or do something different. People are like, that is not how the saving throw works. Like, it's fine. Like, you'll be okay. Yeah. And to an extent, like, you know, they're big complex games. Like, people will just get it wrong or they just don't care. Like,
Baron Hembud had rescue dogs from Romania, but I mean, it's a little bit less of a trek from, you know, Romania to Wales, I think, than Ukraine Canada. Like, Canada. Like going all the way across the entire continent.
No, this is true. Somebody knew.
Oh, unless they did it the other way. Maybe shorter. I don't know.
They had brought a dock to, I forget if they moved from England or where it was, but they moved to Australia and brought a dock with them. So that's like, I feel like that's like the cap for animal travel is like to the other. Or I guess if you went to Japan. You are like super breaking up again. So I think that's like the your internet connection telling us we need to wrap shit up.
Actually, I even got a notice this time. I don't know if I'm showing up right now, but it told me you lost connection.
Oh, okay. You're still connected, but it's like super blurry. Yeah, and occasionally it's just like your static face, but it always gets like a very like pleasant angle of your face, you know? So
perfect. Well, okay. Yeah. It's good to wrap it up then.
Yeah. Yeah. So this was the maximum overshill episode. So next time we'll do something obnoxiously indie that nobody will want to watch.
That's right. In the new year. 2026.
Obnoxiously indie. True. Oh, well, in that case, we do have the obvious episode we need to do, which is like hobby like resolutions.
Oh. Or why 2025 sucked.
Yeah. If a view count goes down, we'll do that one because people love a bitch session. well, we can do kind of a like retrospective a little bit. So
yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, since I'm only half here anyway, I'm gonna say let's say goodbye.
Yeah. Good.
All right. Take care.
Peace, bye. Love.
Peace.
Planetfall.
And bye-bye.
This episode of Bad Internet Friends was streamed live on YouTube and Twitch. There is a North American-friendly live stream every second Wednesday of the month and a European-friendly live stream every fourth Monday of the month.